Welcome to episode 233 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Saturday, August 18th, 2012. I am the Solo Monster. Right off the top here, thoughts and prayers with Dutch Mantel, one of the all-time great wrestling bookers and managers, and to his family on the tragic loss of their 16-year-old granddaughter Amelia this past week. Amelia was killed instantly in a car wreck after her vehicle was struck head-on by a guy who was speeding, doing 73 in a 55-mile-an-hour zone. The cops actually saw him speeding and turned around to chase after him, but by the time they found him, the accident had already taken place. The man himself later died on the operating table. Normally, in stories like this, particularly those involving drunk drivers, and I have no idea if this guy was drunk or on drugs, although Dutch says they found all sorts of pills in his car and that he was a known drug user. But normally, in a situation like this, the cruel irony is that an innocent person loses their life and the bad guy walks away without a scratch. In this case, the guy wasn't so lucky, but that still doesn't take away the pain, I'm sure, for Dutch and his family. Really, no words can. And if there's a lesson to be learned here, it's that you should take no one and nothing in life for granted, because it can all be gone in an instant. And just an awful situation, and I want to bring this up also because Dutch has been posting quite a bit on Facebook. Anybody who follows him or is friends with him, he's just been pouring his heart out trying to deal with this tragedy. And he posted a message that I guess the girl's mother would like to spread her daughter's ashes on the Grand Canyon. And so in order for her to do that, she needs a little bit of help. So anybody who is willing to donate a couple of bucks via PayPal may do so. The email address is dirtydutchmantel. That's Mantel with two L's at the end. dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com. I guess anybody who can donate anything at all will go towards helping the girl's mother spread her ashes on the Grand Canyon. So if you can help out, that's great. But if not, that's okay, too. Just an awful situation all around. And again, thoughts are with Dutch Mantel and his family. Tonight on Showtime, big MMA fight featuring the undefeated Rowdy Ronda Rousey defending her Strikeforce bantamweight title against Sarah Kaufman. Rousey has 8 consecutive armbar finishes in her fights, which just puts Alberto Del Rio to shame. This is what Rousey had to say about her fight, and the reason I bring this up, because this is so great. This is what Ronda said in an interview this week in regards to her fight tonight. She said, quote, "If I get her in an armbar, I'm going to try to rip it off and throw it at her corner. If I get her in a choke, I'm going to hold on to it until she's actually dead. And if I get a knockout, I'm going to go all the way. I'm going to try to pound her face into the ground. And she's depending on the competence of the California State Athletic Commission to walk out of that cage alive." End quote. Well then, that's one way to hype up a fight. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be home tonight to see it live, but I will be. I will have it waiting for me on DVR when I get home. I predict that Rousey stays undefeated, although this is supposedly going to be her toughest test to date. I can't say that I'm all that familiar with women's MMA in terms of the other fighters. You really don't hear too much about the other fighters, I think, because I don't want to say there's not a lot of talent there, because I don't know if that's true or not, but certainly there are very few bona fide female MMA stars. You have, you know, Cyborg Santos, Gina Carano was before she started doing movies, and Ronda Rousey is the new kid on the block. She is the champion. And I'm actually really looking forward to seeing that fight tonight. So if you are an MMA fan, check it out on Showtime. Now, this Sunday, WWE presents the 25th annual SummerSlam, which, by the way, I read this morning where SummerSlam is rumored to be returning to Madison Square Garden in New York City next year in 2013. That's after being held in Los Angeles the last several years. Normally they go to L.A., and it's a whole week-long thing. They fly the talent out there. They love to you know, carouse and meet with the Hollywood types, and that's why they've been doing it in L.A. And so I guess the plan as of right now is to bring it back to NYC, although that's not confirmed, but it is looking likely. So we'll see what happens there. But in the meantime, they are in Los Angeles. It is SummerSlam 2012, which is the 25th annual edition. At least that's what they say. For all I know, remember when WrestleMania 25 came, they billed that as the 25th annual, and that wasn't exactly true. I would imagine that's probably the case here. Let's run down the card really quick from top to bottom, give some quick thoughts and predictions. Of course, what is the main event on this show? It's a matter of interpretation. Some people believe that Brock Lesnar and Triple H is the real main event. Other people say, no way, WWE Championship Triple Threat match is the real main event. If you just watch the way the WWE has promoted these matches, I think it's safe to say that Lesnar and Triple H is the main event of this show. That doesn't mean the match will go on last. I think it will. Part of that will also have to do with the outcome. And if, let's say, Brock Lesnar is going to win the match, I don't know that they would want to end the pay-per-view with Brock Lesnar winning. So then maybe in that case, the match goes on second or third from the top. If Triple H stands valiantly victorious at the end, that I can see them ending the pay-per-view with. Let's put it this way. I think they're ending the show with Lesnar versus Triple H. This match was going to have Shawn Michaels in Triple H's corner, as we saw on Raw Monday night. HBK was obliterated by Brock Lesnar, and they announced on WWE.com that Michaels would, in fact, not be there. And I believe that he will not be there. Some people say that he'll do a run-in at the end, which, I guess is possible, but I believe it when they say that he will not be there. As far as a prediction in this match, I've called it for months. I stand by my prediction. Triple H beats Brock Lesnar. I'll talk more about this once we get to the Raw review from Monday night in a few minutes. But, Triple H over Lesnar. CM Punk, John Cena versus The Big Show triple threat match. I'm going with CM Punk. I am hearing rumors that WWE might actually want to put the title back on Cena. Maybe not at SummerSlam, but they want to put the belt back on Cena to build to a Rock versus Cena rematch at the Royal Rumble. And then potentially do Rock vs. Punk at WrestleMania. I guess I'd be okay with that, but I hate changing the title in triple threat matches. You know, Punk has been champion for so long now, and they've made a big deal about it. You know, they're constantly talking about Punk has been champion for 200 and something days. He just passed the reins of Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart. And so they want people to know that him being champion for this long is a big deal. If he's going to drop the title, I think it should be in a one-on-one match. Survivor Series is going to mark 1 year since his second title reign started. Why not have him drop it there? Why not build to a Cena versus Punk title match at Survivor Series and have Cena take the belt there if that's the direction they want to go in? So I do think Punk retains. I hope he does. So I'm going with CM Punk in this match. World Championship match, Sheamus defending against, surprise, surprise, Alberto Del Rio, as predicted. On SmackDown this week, Sheamus begged Booker T to put Del Rio back in the title match at the pay-per-view, and that's exactly what happened. I don't think it changes a thing. I think Sheamus still goes over and retains the title. Chris Jericho and Dolph Ziggler. We all know that Jericho is leaving. This may well be his final appearance. If not, then I would guess Raw the next night for sure would be it for Jericho before he goes on tour. I could see them swerving us by figuring, you know, everybody knows he's leaving. Jericho's been doing interviews all week, openly talking about the fact that he's on his way out. So let's have him beat Dolph, just to surprise people. I predict that's exactly what's going to happen. Dolph loses in this match. It'll be a great match. It could potentially steal the show. I'm actually really looking forward to this match. But I could see Dolph losing. And then later on, I predict that after Sheamus' victory, Ziggler cashes in his Money in the Bank contract, and he wins the World Heavyweight title. That is my bold prediction for SummerSlam. Jericho over Dolph, Sheamus over Del Rio, Ziggler cashes in, hopefully successfully if he does so, and wins the World title. Daniel Bryan and Kane. There has been no mention of Charlie Sheen on TV the last couple of weeks on Raw, so either they never had a deal with Sheen to begin with, or they do, but they don't trust him enough to actually show up, so they didn't bother promoting it. I would suspect that Charlie Sheen is going to, at the very least, be shown sitting in the audience and will end up doing some sort of angle with Daniel Bryan, although I don't know this. But as far as the match goes, I predict Kane goes over. Intercontinental Championship match, The Miz defends against Rey Mysterio. I'm going to go with The Miz retaining the title. Otherwise, what was the point of putting the title on him in the first place? Unless they just wanted to transition it from one babyface to the other. If Miz loses the title at SummerSlam, that is the definition of a transitional champion right there. Christian was the Intercontinental Champion for a while. You know, big babyface. I guess I could see them not wanting to have one babyface in Christian drop it to another babyface in Mysterio, so give it to The Miz and have him drop it to Rey, but I actually hope that doesn't happen. I think Miz needs all the help he can get, and even though the title doesn't mean much, it still means a little something, so I'll go with Miz. Tag Team Championship match, the Primetime Players challenge Kofi Kingston and R-Truth. I'm going to go with the Primetime Players here. I think we need some new blood in there, and even though they don't have AW in their corner, I would hate to have their push halted because of that, so I say the Primetime Players go over. We also have a pre-show match, United States Championship on the line, Santino Marella defending against Antonio Cesaro. I think the time is right to get that title off Santino, and I can't think of a better person. Although I guess it's kind of funny that the U.S. title is bouncing around all these non-Americans. But nonetheless, I predict that Cesaro wins the championship, and if he doesn't, they're fools, because he should. There was talk of adding a Brodus Clay Damian Sandow match to the show. I didn't hear them officially mention that on TV. I haven't seen anything on WWE.com. So maybe it'll be one of those matches they add at the last minute on the pay-per-view. I think we'll see the match, and if we do, I predict Sandow over Brodus. And that is your SummerSlam card for this Sunday. In a lot of ways, although I am looking forward to Jericho and Ziggler, and I'm sure the triple threat for the WWE title will be pretty good, this really is a one-match show. It's all about Lesnar and Triple H. It's the big match they've been building now for months. It's very similar to SummerSlam back in 05, which was also a one-match show. You had the Icon against the Legend, or however they were billing it, Shawn Michaels against Hulk Hogan, and that was a big pay-per-view for WWE. That SummerSlam did probably the best SummerSlam buy rate in a number of years. I don't think they've come close since. They did something like 500,000 domestic buys, which is huge by today's standards. So I think in a lot of ways this is very similar, although I don't see the SummerSlam coming close to 500,000 domestic. It's just not going to happen. But in a lot of ways, it is a one-match show. It's Lesnar and Triple H. I'm very curious to see how that match goes. You know, Lesnar has a very hard-hitting kind of style. He busted Cena open 30 seconds into their match back at Extreme Rules. Is Triple H willing to take that sort of abuse? Are we going to see blood? You know, something tells me I don't think we are. But it certainly made for a hell of a spectacle, even with the shitty finish in the Cena-Lesnar match. So we'll see what these guys can pull out. Monday Night Raw, episode 1003 from Dallas, Texas, this past Monday night. In response to JTG ranting on Twitter about how he and all the other WWE talents, mid-card talents, are disrespected, WWE held a talent meeting before Raw on Monday, offering the chance for anyone who was unhappy to speak up and air their grievances. Apparently, nobody did. During the meeting, WWE officials reminded talents that they needed to handle themselves professionally when using social media and basically to not say anything that could be seen as offensive to kids. And of course, one week after openly complaining on Twitter, JTG magically appeared on Raw for the first time in months, even though it was to be squashed by Ryback. In effect, he got what he wanted. So, you know, the company seems to be sending mixed messages here. I don't think they are condoning what JTG did. That's why they called this meeting and said, be very careful what you say in public. But one of the things that JTG griped about was the lack of TV time, and all of a sudden he's on TV. So I think there's some mixed messages there. Nonetheless, if you've got a bunch of people with legitimate gripes, mumbling silently to themselves, or leaking things to wrestling websites because of how frustrated they are, and then nobody speaks up when the company calls a meeting to address these very concerns, then you've got nobody to blame but yourself. I know I wouldn't want to be the first person or the only person to raise their hand in a meeting like that, and we know WWE could very easily turn around and make an example out of that person as a way to prevent these things from happening in the future. But you know what? If you feel so strongly that you're being mistreated, then speak up. and deal with the consequences, whatever they may be. Maybe they earn you some respect and you start to see some positive changes, or maybe they job you into oblivion and wish you well in your future endeavors. But somebody has to be a leader and stand up. Apparently nobody did. So I don't want to read any more stories about how unhappy somebody is with their push or payouts or any of that stuff. I don't want to read tweets about how, oh, the fans have no idea what we all go through. It's so unfair. Woe is me. Yes, I know AW just got fired. You know, he just got shit canned. But not because he voiced any concerns. He tweeted something that he should not have. And the rape joke just gave them an easy out to get rid of the guy. But these other guys, I mean, you know, did Papa Shango put a silent spell on them? I don't understand. Anyway, Raw Monday night. Raw opened with a CM Punk vs. Big Show match. This was the go-home show, by the way, to SummerSlam. Daniel Bryan came out unexpectedly in the middle of the match, music and all, to really just an amazing reaction from the crowd. I mean, people were chanting yes, Bryan was chanting no, people were jumping up and down. You know, it was one of those crowd reaction shots where it just looks like pandemonium in the building. That's what this was. It was just awesome. And he apparently feels that he, as in Daniel Bryan, should be fighting for the WWE Championship instead of having a meaningless match with Kane at SummerSlam. I added that last part in, but you know he really feels that way. He's right, too. Bryan interfered. He went after Punk, put him in the no lock. John Cena ran down to the ring to make the save. Always high comedy watching that. He cleaned house, and then AJ came out to make a match later on, pitting Big Show and Daniel Bryan against CM Punk and John Cena, which Punk was not too happy about. We were told that Brock Lesnar and Triple H would be having a contract signing later tonight for their match at SummerSlam. I was hoping for their sake that this contract signing would go much smoother than the last contract signing that we saw Brock Lesnar in a couple of months ago, which was just wretched, just absolutely atrocious. And it was, largely because they had Paul Heyman there this time doing most of the talking for Brock. They should have had him doing that from the very beginning. I mentioned this during my Impact review last week when they did the Hardcore Justice contract signing for the Bobby Roode Austin Aries main event, where Bobby Roode was threatening not to sign the contract. And the point is still relevant here. Why do these promotions wait until the week before their pay-per-view to make their main events official? It just seems like a really bad idea to me. I don't know, maybe it's just me. This is the point in the show now where JTG got his backstage segment and his match with Ryback. More TV time than the guy has gotten on Raw in months, maybe years. Michael Cole on commentary brought up JTG's recent tweets. He said that he hoped JTG tweeted about this. Basically, this was their way of saying F you to the guy. Ryback has new entrance music where they've piped in his Feed Me More battle cry. Ryback would be like the perfect person for WWE to use in an advertising campaign. If they could just make a deal with like Burger King or Sonic or Taco Bell or something, they could just have him scarfing down some burgers screaming, Feed Me More, over and over again. There's potential there. I'm telling you, they can make some money. Ryback was way over with the crowd this week. Still, he still gets some Goldberg chants, but they're not nearly as loud as they've been in the past. And he now does this thing like Sheamus does, where, you know, when Sheamus beats his chest and he screams Brogue over and over again, and the crowd kind of chants it along with him. So Ryback now does this thing where he chants Feed Me More, and the crowd chants along with him. And they were into it. I mean, remember, Vince McMahon once said, before Ryback got injured back during his days as Skip Sheffield from NXT, Vince said that he envisioned Ryback as potentially being the number two babyface in the entire company behind John Cena one day. And I was also a big proponent of the guy during all the Nexus stuff way back when. If you go back and listen to those old sound-offs, you know, I don't think I necessarily said that he would be the number two babyface in the company behind Cena, but I said there was big potential with this guy, because it looked to me back then as though the direction they were going in was very similar to Batista and Evolution, in that Wade Barrett is the leader of Nexus, and here's this big, massive guy, kind of the enforcer of the group, and I really thought there was potential to build, keep the Nexus going, keep them strong, have them win at SummerSlam, which they completely fucked up that year, and keep it going, and ultimately have Ryback break away from Nexus. Maybe he gets tired of taking Wade Barrett's shit, and the crowd would get behind the guy because the guy's a beast. And you don't have too many big guys like him anymore the way that we used to many years ago. So a guy like Ryback tends to stand out a little bit amongst guys like CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and Cody Rhodes, and then boom, you've got a guy like Ryback. And so even then, I said the guy had the potential to be a big deal. So, you know, he seems to be getting over more and more each week, and as long as he can, you know, as long as he doesn't get hurt, but also he's going to have to start doing more. So, you know, they've got to start giving him people a little bit higher on the mid-card, giving him a mid-card title like the Intercontinental title or the U.S. title, even though those belts don't mean anything. You know, maybe Ryback, if he gets over enough, could make that mean something. Remember, when Goldberg was on the rise in WCW, he beat Raven first to become the United States champion. And if you go back and watch that Goldberg-Raven match, which I think I did a match anatomy, which I haven't done in a while, but I did a match anatomy on that match a while back on the Sound Off. That was a hell of a match. The crowd was ungodly into Goldberg in that match, and I think they could kind of book Ryback in a similar way if they wanted to. So, anyway, he still has pink eye. I thought that was worth mentioning, and he killed poor JTG. Ryback did, not the pink eye. We were told that Piper's Pit would be returning tonight, kind of random, having Roddy Piper on the show, although I did mention that WWE was considering having legends on the show every week, or at least sometimes, after that legend segment did so well in the ratings on the 1,000th episode. So the fans had the chance here to pick Piper's guest. Their choices were Chris Jericho, Dolph Ziggler, or The Miz. I'll give you one guess who won this contest. If your answer was not Chris Jericho, then you are a fool. R-Truth pinned Heath Slater. He was attacked afterwards by the primetime players, who were, of course, without AW. They said Kofi Kingston was out of the country, hence why his partner was left here to die. Two teams will meet at SummerSlam. Mark Henry touted from the Olympics in London. Colin Lawler gave NBC a verbal blowjob on commentary for their coverage of the games. Hopefully they cleaned up when they went to commercial. They also mentioned that Paulie D of the Jersey Shore was tonight's social media ambassador for Monday Night Raw. I would be more entertained by Paulie Shore tweeting about Raw than I would Paulie D. But they still won't pick me. I can't imagine why. I tweet about Raw for free every week. My price is much more reasonable than Paulie D's. We need to start a campaign for Solomonster to be Raw's official social media ambassador. I'll even join Tout if they want me to. Let's get that campaign going. Sin Cara beat Tensai in basically a squash match. Maybe this is his punishment for that offensive tout that he posted a couple of weeks ago. I don't know, but somehow Tensai seems to have gotten fatter. So I dub the Fat Albert from here on out. After the match, he once again beat up Sakamoto and left. I think a great payoff to all this, if they have any intention of pushing Sakamoto as a wrestler at some point, because as far as I know, Sakamoto, there you go. As far as I know, he was in developmental before they put him in this role, so I assume he can wrestle. I think it would be great to just, like, one day, you know, Tensai's beating him up and just have Sakamoto snap and actually fight back against Tensai. I think the fans would really be into that. And really, if that's not where this thing is leading, then I have absolutely no idea why they keep subjecting us to this. It just serves absolutely no purpose whatsoever. Up next was Piper's Pit. And the best thing I was going to say the best thing I could say about this. There really is not much good to say about this. It was not a good night for Hot Rod. He was off his game. He kept stumbling over his words. At one point, he was chanting Y2J, which didn't seem to really serve any purpose. He just seemed like a lost old man when he was doing that. It was kind of painful to watch, to be honest with you. The fans voted for Chris Jericho to be Roddy's guest. After a while, Dolph and Vicky came out. And if you didn't know that Jericho had turned babyface, he made it official here. He was using some of his old classic expressions. I think he told Vicky at one point to shut the hell up. Miz came out. This all ended up with Jericho cleaning house on the heels. He celebrated with Piper. Suffice to say, this will not go down as one of the greatest Piper's Pit segments of all time. During the break, AJ tweeted that she had made a triple threat match for Right Now involving Jericho, Ziggler, and Miz. I hate when they take two guys that have a match at the pay-per-view and they put them in the same ring together the week before on TV. That being said, this was a great match. Best match on the entire show. It went about 15 minutes. Crowd was super into it. Finish came when Jericho had Miz locked in the walls, but Vicky had the referee distracted as Miz was tapping out. This allowed Ziggler to sneak up from behind Jericho, grab him for the zigzag, and he got the pin. And I was predicting a Jericho win at SummerSlam anyway, and I believe it even more after this finish. So, really fun match. We had a Divas tag team match pitting Layla and Caitlyn against Beth Phoenix and Eve Torres. No Divas stopwatch this week as somebody called my phone just before the match started and I forgot to start it. It lasted longer than the Sin Cara Tenzai match, so that's a victory in and of itself. Caitlyn pinned Beth to win the match, so sucks to be Beth. Cena and Punk beat Big Show and Daniel Bryan after Cena pinned Bryan with an AA. Cena is fighting for the WWE title this weekend. Bryan is not, so I have no problem with him losing here. Bryan was still the most over guy in this match. People were chanting yes at him, which only made him angrier and angrier as the match progressed. At one point, he angrily tagged in the Big Show and yelled at him to get the hell out of the ring. It's like Daniel Bryan has got Bob Holly's old gimmick where he thinks he's a super heavyweight and he bosses all the big guys around. Only the difference is that Bryan has talent. During the match, Punk and Cena began imitating each other's signature moves. Watching John Cena attempt a high knee in the corner followed up by a bulldog was entertaining to say the least. When the match was over, Punk offered a handshake to Cena. Cena didn't trust him, so Punk just walked away. Backstage, they show Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar plotting the death of Shawn Michaels. This excited me. Later, they had another backstage segment where Michaels, who had been anxiously waiting for his buddy Triple H to show up the entire show. Triple H was running late, apparently. His supposed best friend is running late to his own show just 1 week after Brock Lesnar threatened Shawn Michaels' life. Some friend Triple H turned out to be. Anyway, Michaels bumped into Brock. Brock spared him, allowed him to walk away. This would only be temporary. Damian Sandow beat Christian clean with his neck breaker. Shocking finish, I thought. Pleasantly surprised to see them put Sandow over somebody like Christian so strong. And I was equally surprised that they had Brodus Clay limp out there and cause a distraction for a near fall that in fact did not result in a three count. I think 9 times out of 10 when they do something like that, the heel gets rolled up or something, or you know, turns around and walks into somebody's finisher and gets pinned. It's such a stupid finish, but they did not do that here. And Sandow won the match clean, so anyway, this was good. Lesnar and Heyman made their way out for the contract signing of Doom. Heyman said that Brock will not be held responsible for what he does to Triple H this Sunday at SummerSlam, so he wants him to sign a hold harmless agreement. I think we all have that one coworker that we wish would sign a similar agreement. Heyman invited HBK down to the ring, so out he came. He had the same look he had on his face backstage in Montreal at Survivor Series when he realized he now had to share a locker room with Bret Hart. So in other words, he was scared shitless. Triple H conveniently decided to show up at this point. How nice of him. Triple H signed the contract. Brock signed the contract as well. He then threw it in Hunter's face and left the ring. And I know some people were worried at this point thinking, that's it? That can't be it. But I knew better. I didn't watch the show live. I watched it on DVR, so I was not aware of the fact that they still had so much time left in the show, but I still knew. I knew Shawn was not escaping that arena in one piece. They showed some touts with fans giving their opinion on Booker T taking Alberto Del Rio out of the world title match at SummerSlam, you know, before he turned around and put him right back in. The great thing about DVR is that I could fast forward through all of this, and I did not have to watch any of this shit. So I don't know what these people said, nor do I care, but I'm sure it was terrible. Matt Stryker was interviewing Big Show backstage when suddenly we heard car horns honking in the background, and suddenly my heart sank. Whenever WWE is promoting a big match for pay-per-view, and in the build-up to it you hear car horns or you hear screeching tires, you know what's coming. They just can't help themselves. So my first thought was, fuck! Another car accident angle. They had Brock, this tough guy, former UFC champion, resort to running over Shawn Michaels with his Hummer. I was sure of this. But to my delight, they did no such thing. Paul Heyman was simply blocking Shawn Michaels' car from exiting the building. Michaels was yelling at him to get out of the way when all of a sudden, here comes Brock, who grabs Shawn Michaels. He pulls him out of his car, telling him, "I told you I was going to get you." That was like the best line on Raw all year. I could listen to that all day. And he wasn't lying either. He did tell him that. He warned him. Brock Lesnar warned Shawn Michaels, and Shawn still showed up to Raw anyway. So as far as I'm concerned, he got exactly what he deserved. And I would like to imagine that this is Brock Lesnar's same reaction whenever he gets road rage and somebody cuts him off. You know, the other guy comes to a stop at a red light, and Brock just drags him out of his car while, you know, reciting that same line. Brock bopped into the camera, which caused the feed to cut out. So we never actually got to see Brock murdering Shawn. We only heard his screams, which I thought made it better. It's like a horror movie, you know? Back in the day, you watch those early, like the very first Halloween movie with Michael Myers. There is no blood, no gore of any kind in that movie. It's all about suspense. And you don't see Michael Myers very often in that movie. It's all about suspense. You know, sometimes less is more. And I thought it worked in this situation. Plus, it didn't matter anyway, because we ended up seeing them come out to the ring, and we got to see Brock kill Shawn anyway. So anyway, back from break, we see all of the Raw jobbers, AJ, standing around HBK's car. The windshield has been destroyed. Shawn and Brock are nowhere to be found. Triple H finally shows up. He's asking what happened. AJ tells him that Brock dragged Shawn away. They went that away. It's like a horror movie. We cut back to inside the arena. We see Brock calmly carrying Shawn's carcass on his shoulders. He throws him into the ring. He gives him an F5. And he then puts Shawn Michaels in a Kimura. And he threatened to break his arm when Triple H stormed down to the ring. Heyman told Triple H not to take another step or else Brock would break his buddy's arm. And do you know why Brock Lesnar was such a great heel? Because even though Triple H stayed put and didn't move, Brock doesn't give a fuck. And he broke Shawn's arm anyway. That's what a monster does. He broke Shawn's arm because he can. And Heyman was equally great here. He was shouting, "Oh my God, you broke his arm!" as though he didn't really expect Brock to do that. And now look what you've done. I didn't get the sense that Paul was saying it in a sarcastic way. He seemed genuinely concerned over what Brock had just done. He was also saying, "This is bad, this is bad." So, you know, he clearly realized, much the same way Randy Orton did, for example, when he RKO'd Stephanie McMahon in the build-up to WrestleMania 25. And remember that when Triple H came out, and Triple H was fuming mad, and they had this great camera shot of Orton with this expression on his face, like, "Oh, shit, what have I done?" This was very similar. It was like, "Oh, shit, you know, we just pushed this guy over the edge." So I like that. I like that aspect of it. So in the end, they did exactly what they should have done, which is sacrifice the beloved Shawn Michaels, who can sell his broken arm by simply not appearing on TV. They did that to help get Brock over as a vicious monster and add heat to the Lesnar-Triple H match at SummerSlam. Now, would I have waited this long to do the angle? Probably not. You know, I think I would have pulled the trigger a week or two earlier and then maybe work on two separate video packages to air on TV this past week, like that awesome one they did with Brock leading up to the match with John Cena. But you know what? What's done is done. They did the right thing, and I'm interested in seeing their match. I still maintain, again, Hunter is winning. My heart says Brock. My head has been fucked with so many times. I just cannot imagine Triple H doing a clean job for Brock Lesnar, a guy that I'm sure he still thinks, you know, doesn't have his heart in the wrestling business and probably doesn't deserve to be put over. You know, they've certainly set this up as a match where Hunter gets his revenge, and I think that's exactly what's going to happen, but we'll see. Lots of wrestling on the show this week. There were 8 matches total on Raw, which is a lot, plus Piper's Pit and the contract signing. It was a good show, but 3 hours is just death. There is no way this is going to last. I may have to start watching this show on DVR, on a DVR delay, you know, where I catch up with it like midway through or something, because it's just too much. 3 hours is just, it's awful. It's absolutely awful. A couple of other news notes here for WWE. They are apparently already discussing names for the Hall of Fame in 2013. And the rumored names on the list being considered by WWE right now. And again, it's still very, very early. And ultimately, the decision is up to Vince McMahon. But the names include Mick Foley, which I think I've said before makes a lot of sense. Foley, in some tweets, has been campaigning on Twitter basically saying that he hopes he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame next year, because obviously he's from New York, and it's the Garden. It's a very special place for him. And I think the time is right. I mean, what are you waiting for? Foley has really been retired for years now, in WWE anyway, as an active full-time performer. I think the time is appropriate to put him into the Hall of Fame, and I don't think anybody would deny the fact that he doesn't deserve to be in there. I think he does. So Foley is being considered. Here's another name being considered. Our old friend Kevin Nash, apparently, is on the list of people being considered for the Hall of Fame. And when you look at some of the other people they've inducted, I'm not going to sit here and say Nash doesn't deserve it. You know, he's held every major title there is to hold. He was a main event star in WWE, in WCW. He was a pivotal part of the original NWO, which was a highly successful angle for WCW. So I do think Kevin Nash deserves to go in the Hall of Fame. I think the timing, given his recent comments, is maybe not the best. But Nash is apparently being considered, as is Bob Backlund, who actually has turned down at least one invitation in the past from WWE many years ago. I think back in 2004, they wanted him to go into the Hall of Fame, and he said no because... And there's a discrepancy in why. I've heard both stories. I've heard that he refused because he still felt he had one run left in him. I've also heard that he was not enamored with the fact that they put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame. He thought that made it into a joke. I believe he felt that he had another run left in him at the time, and you know, that was, God, that was probably, what, 8 years ago? Almost 9 years ago? I think the time is right. I think Bob Backlund deserves to go in, especially if Bruno's not going to go in. Backlund is another champion from that old school period who did big business in the Garden. I don't think that anybody sold out as many shows at Madison Square Garden during that era, other than Bruno, as much as Bob Backlund did. So I think he's a very worthy candidate. And supposedly, there has been talk of honoring Macho Man Randy Savage in the Hall of Fame next year. And to that I say, I'll believe it when I see it. How many times have we thought they were going to honor Savage? It seemed like the perfect time to do it after he died, you know, the year after, which would have been this past year, and they did not do it. Especially, not only, you know, given the fact that he had just passed away the year before, but, you know, Savage, I think, is from Florida. I believe, if nothing else, he was living there. They always used to bill him from Sarasota, Florida. I don't know if he was born there or not. So he's got the Florida connection. It would have been, you know, WrestleMania was in Miami. It would have been, I think, an appropriate place to induct him, and they didn't. So now, supposedly, they're talking about doing something for Randy Savage. And I just, you know, I hope they do. I can't get excited about it because, like I said, I'll believe it when I see it. So that's your Hall of Fame update. According to the Wrestling Observer Newsletter this past week, I thought this was interesting. WWE actually made a $300,000 profit on the recent re-release of the 1989 film No Holds Barred, which was released last month for the very first time on DVD. Apparently they spent $100,000 on production and marketing, so they expect their cut of the DVD sales to end up at $400,000. So I guess if you you do the math, it ends up with a $300,000 profit, which is not too shabby and would make it the third most profitable WWE movie in the last 5 years. Think about that. Think about all the crappy movies they've made. And you know, with the Orton film, the Triple H film on the bus, and what was that other film he did, Inside Out, and I admit, I saw very few of these films. Maybe they're not as crappy as I'm making them out to be. Maybe if you have kids, you enjoyed it as a family film. I don't think any of these films were praised. Really, the only film I think that got any sort of praise was the Randy Orton film, which I had wanted to see, and I never did. But the point is, I find it all very ironic that they spend millions of dollars to market these movies with their current WWE superstars, and the third most profitable movie that they put out is a re-release of a Hulk Hogan film from over 20 years ago. I just think that's funny. But you know what? To all the people who mocked my love of this film, I say ha! I say ha to you. Now, they've just got to put Body Slam out on DVD, which is another gem from my childhood. And that'll make the universe... Actually, I guess Body Slam was not a WWE film. Actually, I wonder if it is out on DVD, the movie Body Slam. Let me check here. I'm very curious now. Let's see here. This is riveting radio here on this podcast right now. I'm going to find out right now if that movie is on DVD. And, hold on a second. Oh my God, it is. How about that? Body Slam is, in fact, out on DVD. MGM released it in March of 2011, so it just came out last year. M. Harry Smilak is a down-on-his-luck music manager having a hard time attracting talent and booking gigs for his band. When making arrangements for a campaign fundraiser, he mistakes Rick Roberts, a professional wrestler, for a musician and hires him. At that moment, he becomes a wrestling manager and starts to book matches for him and his teammate Tonga Tom. The team is a success, and Harry decides to take his wrestlers and his band on a rock and wrestling tour. The tour is a success, and Harry feels what it's like to be a winner again. How about that? That's the synopsis for Body Slam. This movie actually has a ton of wrestlers in it. I know it stars Roddy Piper. And was it Tonga Kid that was his partner? I think Tonga Kid was Rikishi's brother in real life. Although the Samoan family lineage gives me a headache whenever I try to think about it, so I could very well be wrong. Actually, let's see who the wrestlers are in this film. Let's get a cast list here. And we have Roddy Piper, Sam Fatu, Lou Albano. That's right, Lou Albano was in the movie. Charles Nelson Reilly. Oh, my God. That's right, I forgot about him. Afa Anoa'i, Sika Anoa'i, Fred Blassie was in this film. Ric Flair. That's right, Ric Flair had a very brief cameo in this film as well. Bruno Sammartino, Sheik Alkaissi, and Pistol Pete Marquez. So there you go. If you're into campy old 80s movies with wrestlers, this is right up your alley here. Actually, my birthday is not too far away. This wouldn't be such a bad gift. Switch over to Impact Wrestling from Thursday night. I did not have a chance to see Hardcore Justice. The only real important thing is that Austin Aries retained his World Heavyweight title against Bobby Roode, which means Roode gets no rematch and would seem to indicate that Aries will be the champion going into Bound for Glory, but I wouldn't put any money down on that. I still feel like that title is coming off him somehow before then. Impact on Thursday was really not that good of a show. Aside from a real good AJ Styles-Christopher Daniels match, but you kind of take that for granted every time they step in the ring together. The Aces and Eights storyline does absolutely nothing for me. I find it all very boring. There was way too much Brooke Hogan on this show, and not enough Joe Park. In fact, Joe Park wasn't on the show at all, which is a fail. Samoa Joe beat Magnus to get 7 points in the Bound for Glory series, putting him in second place with 61 points total. After the match, Magnus went to give Joe a chair shot to the head, and Joe blocked it with his hand, but he took a pretty nasty shot to his forearm. I'm glad he got his arm up and all, but this looked really bad. Joe just stood there afterwards. He seethed in anger as Magnus walked away, so okay. Madison Rayne, who won the Knockouts title from Miss Tessmacher at the pay-per-view, came out for what she thought was her championship celebration. She hugged Earl Hebner, who basically helped her win the title. Brooke Hogan walked out and told Madison that Tessmacher would be getting her rematch tonight and that Earl Hebner would no longer be allowed to officiate any of her matches, which made Madison very angry. Madison then insulted Brooke, who came down to the ring to fight her, but Madison and Earl bailed, leaving Brooke Hogan in the ring all by herself when all of a sudden Aces and Eights showed up. And Brooke turned around and she showed absolutely no emotion whatsoever. I mean, it's like she was supposed to act all scared and she forgot. She was terrible here. And guys ran down from the back to chase off Aces and Eights, although Brooke didn't seem too concerned, so I'm not sure why they bothered. She probably would have just fought them off all by herself. And when we came back from break, Sting cut what was actually a pretty passionate promo. He challenged Aces and Eights to show up at 8 o'clock next week for open fight night. So there you go. Then came one of the most mind-bogglingly stupid segments on Impact since the Russo days. So, Chris Daniels and Kazarian are backstage fawning over some new Spider-Man comic book. I guess they're in it or something. I don't know. They start talking about AJ and Claire's baby. And actually, as dumb as this segment was, it also had the best line of the entire show, as Kazarian referred to AJ Styles' unborn child as the phenomenal fetus. I laughed hard at that one. I'm not going to lie. Suddenly, AJ walks into the picture, and he tells Kaz that he knows where babies come from. I have no idea what the purpose of saying that was or what he was talking about, but hey, it's good to know that AJ Styles is aware of where babies come from, especially since he's had three of them. I would hope he does. But wait, gets even better. He mentions that he and Daniels have a Bound for Glory series match later on tonight, and so he proposes the following. If AJ loses the match, and mind you, AJ is the one issuing this challenge completely unsolicited, okay? AJ says that if he loses the match, then he will accept the fact that he is the father of Claire Lynch's demon spawn. Mind you, he has denied for weeks now that he ever slept with Claire and had anything to do with this being his child. But if he loses this pro wrestling match, he will accept the baby as his and presumably, I guess, will pay child support and the like for the next 20 years. However, if AJ wins the match, he takes a paternity test to prove that he is, in fact, not the baby's father. What? What in the world is going on here? Who wrote this dialogue? I demand that person reveal themselves. This has got to be some sort of rib on AJ Styles. Has to be. Why wouldn't he just take a paternity test anyway to prove his point? Why would he put himself in such a predicament? You know, it's worth noting that Claire Lynch was nowhere to be found on the show this week. Not that I'm complaining or anything, but I posted a link to a video that started circulating online about a week or so ago of a cooking infomercial that Claire Lynch did. Her real name is Julia Riley, by the way. She did this cooking video, and people found out that it was her, and they found her personal website, and suddenly she started hiding things, I guess because she's probably ashamed to be associated with this whole storyline, and perhaps she thinks that it'll ruin her career or something. Judging by her acting skills on Impact, I don't think she has anything to worry about. But anyway, the point of all this is, yesterday, I saw a photo online of a woman that looks an awful lot like Claire Lynch, dressed up as Olive Oil from the Popeye cartoon. She was posing for a photo with some dude in a Popeye costume. Apparently they were working at Universal Studios in Orlando on the park's Popeye ride. And it's definitely her in the photo. It is, in fact, Julia Riley, a.k.a. Claire Lynch. So people are really digging into this woman's life, and I kind of feel sorry for her in a way. She clearly did not want any of this getting out, or else why would she start hiding things? And she took down her LinkedIn profile and such. So this week, she's not on the show. And not only that, but AJ Styles actually insults her. He called her a foot. It's a rather odd insult to hurl at someone, calling them a foot. I mean, if he had said that she smelled like a foot, that I can understand. That's a rather appalling thing to say to someone, but he referred to her face, I believe, as a foot. And now they seem to be rushing this whole paternity test thing, and it makes me wonder if we're ever going to see Claire Lynch back on TV again. I'm not so sure she may have just said, fuck this, I'm out of here. I guess if she's back on the show next week, we'll have our answer, but just something to think about. So AJ Styles and Chris Daniels had their match. It was really good, no surprise there. Kazarian interfered in the match. He helped Daniels win. But the referee saw Kaz at ringside. He ordered that the match continue. Styles immediately nailed Daniels with the Pele kick, got the pin, so he now has 43 points in the Bound for Glory series, so he's got some work to do. Sting was on speakerphone in a backstage segment with Hulk Hogan, and this must have been some mega super iPhone that he was using, because the speakerphone on my iPhone is nowhere near as loud or as clear as Sting's was. So Hogan told Sting that next week it was time to get old school, and he would be there in the Impact Zone to fight the Aces and Eights. And if I didn't know any better, I would say that old school was code for going heel, but they just turned Hulk not too long ago, so they wouldn't turn him again. Or would they? I don't know. I don't put anything past these people. Bobby Roode came out looking dejected after his loss to Austin Aries at Hardcore Justice. He blamed everybody but himself for the loss. Said he didn't know where he goes from here. He dropped the mic in the middle of the ring, and he walked out. So that was rather pointless. We then got a video package for next week's Gut Check contestant. It was a pretty emotional story about his brother who got shot and killed when he was younger. I would love to tell you the guy's name. Unfortunately, they never gave it to us. So right now, he's just the guy, which is a great way to get over when people are left to refer to you as simply the guy. Miss Tessmacher pinned Madison Rayne to win back her Knockouts title. Before the match, Brooke Hogan introduced Taryn Terrell as the special guest referee, and then promptly tripped and fell backwards, nearly off the stage. I would say that she could have been seriously hurt, but let's be honest, the girl is a giant. Falling off the ramp for Brooke Hogan would probably be the equivalent of stepping off the curb on the sidewalk. And since she wasn't injured, that makes it okay to laugh. Terrell, for the uninformed, is former ECW GM Tiffany, the same Tiffany that was married to Drew McIntyre before that marriage went to hell, right along with McIntyre's push. And now that his ex is working for TNA, if WWE ever decides to wish him well in his future endeavors, the poor fucker won't have any place to go. Anyway, she wore a very revealing referee's outfit in this match, which was probably the best part of the entire thing. But anyway, Tessmacher won the belt back, so good for her. Main event saw Jeff Hardy pin Bully Ray in a Bound for Glory series match, moving him up to 42 points in the series, 1 point behind AJ Styles. James Storm came down to the ring to make sure that Aces and Eights did not interfere. Bully was still accusing him of being in cahoots with them. And after the match, Storm went to give Bully Ray a super kick. Ray ducked. Storm nailed Hardy by accident. Aces and Eights swarmed the ring at this point. They started applauding James Storm, and as soon as Storm turned around, they all attacked him. And so ends the mystery of whether or not James Storm was, in fact, leading Aces and Eights. Maybe now people will start cheering for him again. Overall, a very weak show by comparison. Not, again, by no means is this the impact that I would sometimes tune into and flip off because it was so horrible back in the day. Just a weak show. Didn't feel special at all. One really good match and really not much else. And on Twitter, by the way, Pope D'Angelo De Niro is saying that he will be out for a few months after being attacked by Aces and Eights. Supposedly this is just a way for them to explain what is actually a real injury. It's either a shoulder injury or I've also heard broken collarbone. I'm not sure which it is, but nevertheless, you can pretty much count him out of the Bound for Glory series. Not like he was going to win anyway. He was pretty much way down at the bottom. So the Pope will be gone for a couple of more months. It was weird, too, because Pope just came back. He was off filming some movies and doing stuff and came back, and now he's gone again. So sucks for him. Let's get to the shout-outs. We got a ton of them to get to this week, and some good questions, too. If you have shout-outs, if you have questions for the mailbag here on the Sound Off, you can email all of that to me. It's the same email address, thesolomonster@gmail.com. All one word, thesolomonster@gmail.com, because otherwise some poor fucker with the email address solomonster@gmail.com is going to get your letter, and he's not going to be able to read it on the air. So send it to thesolomonster@gmail.com. We have Marcus writes in. He was wondering if he can get a shout-out for his birthday. Happy birthday, Marcus. He says, I enjoy the show. It's a ritual now of playing NBA 2K12 and listening to the Sound Off. He says, I've gone back and watched all of the Raws and SmackDowns from May of 01 all the way to 2004, and I'm in the midst of the invasion. And some of the funniest Stone Cold moments came from here, like when Spike Dudley ripped up his petition. What are your favorite Stone Cold invasion moments? Probably, the night that the old Stone Cold came back was probably the best moment. But I did enjoy many of his comedy segments, particularly anything involving him and Kurt Angle and the cowboy hat. That one stands out to me. The one where Austin hugged Vince. I think there was something going on where Austin was a bit jealous of some of the attention that Vince was giving Kurt Angle. So Kurt and Austin during that period was just the saving grace of that whole thing. They were just phenomenal together. And there was this one episode of, it might have been SmackDown, where Austin was hugging Vince in like the parking garage at the end of the episode. But Austin had this maniacal expression on his face. He was awesome. So, those are some of the ones that stand out to me. I wasn't as big of a fan of the milk truck thing as a lot of people were, just because it was such a retread of the beer truck incident, and it just wasn't as good. But Kurt and Austin definitely were entertaining as all hell during that period. Khan from South Carolina by way of New York writes in, loyal listener since shortly before the 100th episode, member of the Fantastic Four. My birthday is today, August 18th. I want to know if a New York transplant could get a birthday shout-out on the Sound Off. And, you know, Khan doesn't say what part of New York he's from. It could be upstate. He could be from Albany. Or he could be from a very different part of New York, say Brooklyn or the Bronx. But either way, happy birthday, Khan. He also wants to know, what do you think Linda McMahon's realistic chances are of winning this time around? I saw on SE Scoops that she became the Republican nominee in the Connecticut Senate race, but politics are not my strong point. Well, let's put it this way. Linda also got the nomination in 2010, and she got trounced in the general election. And that came at a time when Republicans were making gains all over the country, and she still couldn't even come close. So I predict the same thing happens in November. And when all is said and done, think about this. When all is said and done, Linda McMahon, the McMahon family, will have flushed over $100 million down the toilet between these two elections. I think now she spent like over $110 million, because she spent $50 million of her own money in the first election. And so far, she spent something like $12 or $13 million. And it's not even November yet. Think about that. We have our first of two shout-outs from Northern Ireland this week. Oh, this show is global, baby. Oh, it's global. This one comes from Jordan. He's been a listener since episode 124. He would like two birthday shout-outs, one for his brother Craig, who celebrated a birthday on the 17th of August, and one for his own birthday, which is Sunday the 19th. So happy birthday to Craig and Jordan. He says, I've recently been adding to my wrestling DVD collection. One thing I've noticed is the DVD's age rating. Seeing Steve Austin's recent four-disc set being rated as suitable to anyone 18 and over makes perfect sense. What shocked me are DVDs like the Randy Savage Macho Madness Collection or the Best of WWE 2011 is one age rating below that at 15 or above. Even though there are a couple of risky things on them, like let's say R-Truth's heel turn from last year where he was smoking the cigarette, I think the rating is a bit high. There have been plenty of films with the same 15 rating that feature violent scenes with guns, explicit language, and so forth. My question is, do you think wrestling DVDs with high ratings like this have them because of memories of the more adult-oriented product from 10 years ago, or is WWE suddenly no longer PG and we just haven't realized it? He's being sarcastic there, by the way. I actually am not familiar with how they rate these DVDs here or in other countries, so I'm not sure. It may be different for different countries. I imagine it is. That's something to consider. I would think it's just them being overly cautious, because if there's any content on there that they, you know, that could be construed as objectionable, it could affect the rating. I honestly just don't know whether it's a WWE decision or if ultimately it's the decision of whatever ratings board makes these sorts of decisions. I don't know that there's any rhyme or reason to it, but I just don't have a straight answer for you. Lance, the other listener from Northern Ireland, says, I love your podcast. I cannot imagine my Sundays without it. It helped me get through college work in the past, and I recently started a new job as a graphic designer working from home. Now I listen to your podcast to help me get through a big design project and keep me relaxed. I was hoping I could get a birthday shout-out for my best friend, Michael Jordan. Michael and I have known each other for 11 years. He is the only one of my friends who watches wrestling, and the only one I can complain to when Raw sucks. Michael also introduced me to your podcast some time ago, and I have been hooked ever since. I thought, what better way to say thank you than to get him a birthday shout-out? He turns 25 on August 19th, and that comes from Lance. So happy birthday to Michael Jordan. There's a birthday shout-out I never thought I'd be given on the Sound Off. I don't even know that anybody from... Well, I shouldn't say that. Michael Jordan, I would think that people outside the U.S. know who Michael Jordan is, right? The basketball player. I'd be curious, actually. If you are not from the United States, and this could also be an age thing as well, somebody who's 10 years old or 15 years old may not know who Michael Jordan is, but if you are in your early to mid-20s and above, and you live outside the U.S., like in Ireland, for example, or England or somewhere else, I'd be very curious to know if you are, in fact, familiar with who Michael Jordan is. Jesse writes in, been a loyal listener for a while now, he says, since Sound Off number one. I was wondering if I can get a shout-out for my birthday coming up August 25th. For a loyal listener like yourself, absolutely. So happy birthday, Jesse. He also has a question. Why do you think some wrestling fans overhype stuff so much? on the internet, and then piss and moan when they thought something bigger was going to happen. A perfect example of this is when everyone, quote, knew that the promo a couple of years ago for Undertaker was, in fact, Sting coming to WWE. Do you think fans would be happier if they didn't set the bar so high for what they want to happen? Well, of course. I mean, I think that's a life lesson, I think, in general. If you don't set your expectations very high, then you won't be disappointed. Some might say that's a horrible way to live one's life, as a pessimist, always expecting the worst, but I believe that there is something to that theory, where if you don't expect things out of people, because people tend to disappoint you, then you won't be disappointed when they actually do let you down. So that's a morbid life lesson here from the Solemn Monster. But yeah, I mean, look, wrestling fans, of course they overhype things, but I also think, you talk about setting the bar, I think wrestling companies need to set the bar a little higher. I think sometimes they set the bar so low, you know, people let their imaginations run wild, and it's just the way it is. People get excited about that stuff, and that's part of what also makes it fun. So it goes both ways. On the one hand, you don't want to overhype yourself so much that in the end, you know, you're just setting yourself up for disappointment. But on the other hand, it's part of the fun. People for weeks were wondering, oh, is Sting coming to WWE? Somebody put that awesome poster together of the Joker Sting, that WrestleMania poster that looked very legit. It was very well done. Got me excited. Of course, in the end, there was nothing to it. Although Sting did say, he did do an interview later on saying that he was kind of in this position where his TNA contract had expired and was actually thinking about going to WWE. He was aware of the hype. I'm sure people were asking him all sorts of questions, and he actually did call. Either he called WWE or WWE called him. There was a discussion. In the end, they didn't reach a deal. So there's an example of all this hype that could very well have actually led to that event actually happening, but in the end, they just could not come to an understanding. Steve from New York City writes in, would like a shout-out for being follower number 1501 on Twitter. I think last week I said that I would give a shout-out to the 1,500th person to follow me at Solemonster on Twitter. But since that person never cashed in their Money in the Bank shout-out, I will give it to Steve instead. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate the support. And if you are not following me right now at Solemonster, what are you waiting for? Get on there and follow me now. So let's move on to the next part of the mailbag here. I asked you last week to write in about the JTG situation, about the whole situation of payoffs, and do you feel that he has a legitimate gripe if he was not on the WrestleMania card, but feels he was perhaps not compensated as high as he should have been? And this goes for JTG or any other mid-card guy in WWE, particularly one who was not on the WrestleMania show. There wasn't even a dark match this year. There was a dark match, but it didn't involve him. It didn't involve Hawkins and Ryder and Rex and all these other people. So I got some good responses here. I want to run through some of your feedback on this issue. Just a couple of messages here. This one is from Dan Kincaid, who writes in, the low payouts from WrestleMania to the undercard wrestlers. I'm kind of torn on this. To me, it makes complete sense that the main event guys, the ones that people are actually buying the pay-per-views to see, would get the majority of the payout. On the other hand, during the build to WrestleMania, I remember reading a lot of the wrestlers complaining their potential spot was being taken by The Rock. They were basically told to shut it because The Rock being on the card meant more money for everyone. Yeah, that was me. I said that on the sound off. In fact, I went out on a rant about how foolish these people were because they didn't realize that by virtue of Rock being on the WrestleMania card, they all were going to end up making a little more money. That money would trickle down. And I will say this, okay, because that was a passionate rant that I went on my very podcast. And, you know, unlike a lot of sports columnists out there and newspapers who spew complete and total bullshit and they throw people under the bus all the time, and then when it turns out they were wrong, they don't go back and retract what they said or apologize for it or tell people, hey, I got it wrong. You know, I'm willing to do that on occasion, on the very rare occasions that I am wrong, of course. But I did say that very same thing, and if in fact that is not the case, if the issue is that the money, the supposed extra money, because WrestleMania this year did do record business, so, you know, Rock being on the card definitely helped boost the numbers, And if these guys didn't see anything for it, then they actually, I feel, probably do have a right to be a little bit peeved. Although, again, it goes to the issue of, are they on the card or not? You know, it's a different story if, let's say, you had Cody Rhodes, who is maybe not as low on the mid-card as a Zack Ryder or a Tyler Rex, but, you know, Cody is a mid-card guy who had a match at WrestleMania, and I don't know what Cody got paid. I didn't hear of Cody complaining or anything like that. He got to work with the Big Show, but that maybe is the bigger issue here. If you were not on the card at all, where do you stand on the issue? Do you feel these people have a right to complain? So anyway, that came from Dan Kincaid. Let's see. Here we go. This one comes from David from, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Linthicum, Maryland. He's 15 years old. He's been listening to the show since episode 127. On the subject of JTG's Twitter rant, I would be mad. You have a very great point in that JTG and the likes of Derek Bateman or Trent Beretta or Johnny Curtis had absolutely no role in the actual show. They didn't appear on the pay-per-view, and as a result, they should not be paid the same amount as those who actually appeared on the show. But, on the same token, these guys all participated in Access and a lot of the fan events, part of WrestleMania week, and they should be recognized for it. If I were a mid-card to low-card wrestler, I would be upset that I would be working my tail off at house shows and Superstars and NXT in 10-minute matches that usually get rave reviews while I constantly get underpaid. They still travel as much as the big stars. They wrestle as much as the big stars. Just because they aren't on Raw does not mean they aren't having matches and risking their lives as often as John Cena does. And like you said, you tie all that together while constantly being the brunt of a joke by the internet wrestling community and knowing that any little misplaced comment could end your career. I could easily see the frustration. And if JTG, Joe Hennig, Derek Bateman, The Usos, Trent Beretta, and Yoshitatsu were to stand up, they would just be replaced by Seth Rollins, Bo Dallas, Leo Kruger, The Ascension, Rick Victor, and Xavier Woods. I know somebody has to be the jobber, but with so many troubles surfacing amongst the lower card and diva talent, it leads one to believe that those greener pastures are not too green after all. So that comes from David from Maryland. This one comes from Eli. Very succinct message here. I think JTG should be happy he got paid at all, considering he wasn't even on the show. And let's see here if we have any other ones before we move on to other questions. This one comes from Michael, who writes in. Wanted to comment on the JTG situation and answer your question on if he has a legitimate reason to be upset with his compensation for WrestleMania. The way I see it, JTG was not involved in a match at WrestleMania or in the buildup of a match for WrestleMania. I didn't attend any of the WrestleMania weekend festivities, so I can't comment on if he was involved in any of them. And also, I don't know that any of the 80,000-plus in attendance, well, it was 62,000, I think, but if any of the 80,000-plus in attendance were there to see JTG in action, I don't recall any JTG or Crime Time signs when I saw the pay-per-view, not that I was looking out for them. In my opinion, he got a paid day off and has no right to complain. Him not being used on TV or house shows is a different story. CM Punk stated at Wizard World earlier this week that JTG should have spoken to Vince or someone first rather than just tweeting his frustrations. I agree with Punk on this one, and I know from experiences at my job that the, quote, squeaky wheel gets the grease. Punk had been voicing his frustrations to Vince personally for months before ranting about it on TV, and look at all the success that Punk has had. JTG should have gone about things a different way and should not have bitched about little pay for a day that he did not work. So that comes from Michael. Let's move on. I think that those are the main ones that I earmarked here. We got a bunch of other questions here I want to get to because I feel like I've been neglecting the mailbag a bit over the last couple of weeks here. So let's pluck out some questions here. Let's see. I want a good one. All right, Cody. Cody writes in, Fantastic Four member, listener since 198. This may be far-fetched, but I think I know what was up with Samoa Joe being kidnapped from on TNA a couple of years ago. It was aces and eights. After they came up with a plan, and when they would put it into action, they released Joe, and he pretended nothing happened. Now he is their leader, and they will help him win the Bound for Glory series. I know it's a very far-fetched idea, but at least it explains what happened. Please tell me what you think. It will not happen, but I bring this up because I actually like how Cody has attempted to come up with a semi-logical way to tie up the kidnapping storyline. Very creative, I thought. I hate it when TNA or WWE does a storyline, and a storyline that they drag out for a number of weeks or a number of months, and then they don't give us a payoff. They just drop it. I think that's lazy writing. I think that's lazy booking. So, you know, kind of a creative way, even though it's not going to happen. Matthew from Belfast, Northern Ireland. Another Northern Ireland listener. How about that? We haven't gotten a letter from John from Northern Ireland, one of our longtime listeners. He's missing in action here. So Matthew has two quick questions. Number one, what is the worst match stipulation you have ever seen? And number two, how do you think Jeff Jarrett will be remembered after he retires? Well, I think Viagra on a pole in WCW was pretty goddamn awful. I think Jeff Jarrett will be remembered as a good worker who was overpushed far beyond the level of draw that he was. You know, certainly in TNA, and to an extent in WCW, I thought he was pushed as a top guy when I've never looked at Jeff Jarrett as being a top guy. He's a great worker. He had great matches with Kurt Angle in TNA. He can be an entertaining heel. You know, the stuff with him and Karen Jarrett, I thought they had some very entertaining interplay before, you know, they got, quote, fired from TNA. And Jeff Jarrett may well end up being the leader of Aces and Eights, but again, I feel like for a good chunk of his career, he's been far overpushed more than his level of drawing ability would dictate. He'll also probably be remembered for that stupid guitar, which he ripped off from the Honky Tonk Man, and I'm sure Honky Tonk Man may have ripped it off from somebody else, but to me, Jeff Jarrett ripped it off from the Honky Tonk Man, so I can't really give him a lot of credit for that. John from Liverpool, England writes in, what do you think of this idea? The Rock faces Cena for the title at the Royal Rumble and wins, and then Brock Lesnar comes out at number 30 in the Rumble and wins, and will face Rock at Mania. John Cena decides the only thing worth fighting for is to end the streak, and he faces The Undertaker. Then Steve Austin comes back the next night on Raw and challenges CM Punk to a match at WrestleMania. So there is your top three matches, and it keeps John Cena out of the title picture. I like it. I like it. I don't know that I would just have Austin randomly walk out on Raw one night and challenge Punk. I think we could probably come up with a better way of setting that up. And it's still very questionable whether Austin will be fully recovered from his knee surgery, even if he wanted to have a match. But it would certainly set up three very, very big matches. Look, I'd love to see Lesnar Undertaker. But to me, Cena Undertaker is the match you want to do. So to keep Cena out of the title match and find a way to do Cena Taker, to do Rock Lesnar, to do Austin Punk, I mean, that's a major triple threat right there. That's a major triple header for your biggest pay-per-view of the year. So I actually like that idea. Let's see. Here's an interesting question. Udit Sharma from Delhi, India writes in, I am a big fan of the show since episode 156. I want to know, has CM Punk changed his real name to CM Punk, or is it still Phil Brooks? I have no idea where you read that he changed his name to CM Punk, but no, his name is Phil Brooks. He has not changed it like Warrior changed his name to Warrior. So, he is Phil. Don't call him Phil, because unless you know him personally, I think that's probably a sign of disrespect. But as far as I know, his name is still Phil Brooks. All right, we'll end with this. This comes from Matt. Question this week is not really a question. It's more of a topic to discuss. A recent report stated that Undertaker may not participate in next year's WrestleMania, and it got me thinking, what does this mean for Brock Lesnar? Everyone assumes that we're going to get a Lesnar-Taker match at WrestleMania, but if Taker can't go, then that leaves the gate wide open for Lesnar. Here is a list of who I think Lesnar could face at WrestleMania and have a classic match with, and he goes on to list some potential matches for Brock: Lesnar vs. Punk, Lesnar vs. Sheamus, Lesnar vs. Bryan, Lesnar and Ryback, Lesnar and Kane. So he wants my thoughts. What Brock Lesnar match, if not Taker, would I like to see at WrestleMania 29? One of my favorite Brock Lesnar matches was with the smaller yet equally intense Chris Benoit on SmackDown in 2003. They had a great match. To me, matching Lesnar up with Daniel Bryan could be a fantastic match. I would love to see Bryan or Sheamus get the nod. Sheamus and Tenzai had a pretty stiff, hard-hitting big man match on SmackDown several weeks ago. Probably Tenzai's best match since coming back to WWE. you know, can you imagine if Sheamus and Lesnar just laced into one another and stiffed each other? I mean, that'd be a lot of fun to watch, I would think. But Lesnar and Bryan, I just feel like Lesnar and Bryan, even though Bryan is comparatively smaller, obviously, to Brock, is a match that would work. Lesnar versus Punk, honestly, does nothing for me. And I don't know why. I don't know if I don't know. That's a good question. I can't really explain it, but just the idea of Brock Lesnar and CM Punk just doesn't do anything for me. Lesnar Bryan, I think, would be a hell of a match. Lesnar Sheamus, I mentioned before, Lesnar Rock, you know, in a rematch from their SummerSlam match 10 years ago, I think could have a great battle. Those are the matches that I would probably like to see Brock Lesnar in. So we're going to wrap up the mailbag here. Got some good stuff this week. Couldn't get to all of it, but I do want to thank each and every person for emailing me. I do read everything, and we'll try to get your letters on the air if you email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. That's the place for any and all questions, comments, shout-outs, that sort of stuff. You can follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster is my handle, and you can also friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/thesolemonster. I have officially been converted to Facebook timeline, which I'm very dejected about. So you guys probably can't see it right now, but I can, and I guess it'll switch over as of next Friday. You'll all see the new timeline on our official Facebook page. So I have a thread going right now on what cover photo you think we should use for our new Facebook profile. I am taking suggestions on what you would like to see. And also, by the way, I'm also contemplating doing another Facebook mailbag. I think I've only done 3 of these in all these years. They're very, very rare, and sometimes you just don't know when I'm going to have one. The way it works is I will put a thread up on Facebook specifically asking for questions, 1 question per person, for potential inclusion on the Sound Off, and it's been a couple of months, I think, since I've done one. So I'm thinking there may be one, possibly, this week. I'm thinking about it. And in order for you to participate, you need to friend me on Facebook first. Otherwise, you can't leave a question, you can't participate. So if you are not friends with me on there, please send me a friend request, and I will approve you. That's facebook.com/thesolemonster. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel. My username on there is thesolemonster, all one word. There's some vintage episodes of The Sound Off up, including the very first 3 shows from 2007. Feels like a lifetime ago. 5 years ago, in fact. We're going to be celebrating our 5-year anniversary in November. So if you want to hear those early episodes, you can do that on YouTube. And subscribe to the show in iTunes. Type in Solemonster Sounds Off. It'll come right up. You'll see the logo. You can subscribe for free. And whenever a new show goes up, you will be the first person to hear it. It will automatically download for you. And you can leave some love for the show as well. A lot of you have given a star rating to the show. Some of you have left actual reviews. I very much appreciate that. Please continue to do so. It can only help the show. So find us in iTunes. So that's going to do it for this SummerSlam weekend edition of The Sound Off. I hope you all enjoy the pay-per-view tomorrow night. For those of you who will be tuning in some way, shape, or form, streaming it, however you intend to watch or not watch SummerSlam. If you do watch it, enjoy the show. And check out that Ronda Rousey fight on Showtime tonight, because her fights don't tend to go very long, but they do tend to be very exciting. So if you've never seen a women's MMA fight, if you've never seen Ronda Rousey fight, she's in for a challenge tonight, and it should be pretty exciting. So check that out as well. We'll be back next weekend with episode 234, all the SummerSlam fallout on The Sound Off next week, and we'll see if Aces and Eights shows up on Impact to confront Sting and the rest of the TNA roster. Hulk Hogan supposedly will be back on Impact this Thursday. A lot of good stuff coming up, so check it out. We will see you right back here next week, and until then, be well, stay safe, have a good week, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solar Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.